you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activists Show.
We're going to presume that Hermes is with us and that we're here. It's Caroline Casey. Welcome to the Visionary Activist Show. I think it's going well. Oh, we hope... No, it doesn't seem to be.
Yes, you're on, Caroline.
Oh, okay, thank you. All right, that's great. All right, let's try this third time for Hermes. Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and we are embarking on navigating the Ghost River, because that is how the I Ching describes us all now, and Trump having pulled out of the Paris Accords and many things to compost. So more than perfectly, we welcome back fellow astro-mytho-cultural change wizard Daniel Gemario, that we may discern and align with the guiding sky-earth metastory, the cycles of Mars and Venus, the myriad proffered forms of composting tyranny into nutrient for reverent renaissance, and our willingness to be escapade artists, agents of liberating citizen tricksters. So welcome, Daniel. Are you there?
I hear you quite well. Hi, Caroline.
That's a splendid miracle. All righty. So I wanted to, we can dive in anywhere, but I think, you know, part of the dynamic is there's an atmosphere of churlish cruelty wafting over the world. And so we want to, of course, be the antidote to kind of dissipate that cloud, and remembering the purpose of ritual magic was to spiral into collective mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. So you're the perfect dance partner for that.
Well, thank you very much. I woke up this morning very early, of course. It's about 5 a.m. here. We're way up in the mountains. We're about 12 hours way north of Metro Manila, and only to discover that Metro Manila just had an attack. Did you hear that?
Yes. Yes, I did. I did, indeed. I was listening to a great segment on Democracy Now! With Timothy Snyder, a Yale professor, but his book on tyranny. He has many good tips that we might want to weave in. But he also said, prepare for the unthinkable. Tyranny needs terrorism. Be calm when the unthinkable arrives. And it's like Edward Snowden when he was being kind of goaded by interviewer Katie Couric, should we be frightened? Should we be frightened? And he said, no, we shouldn't be frightened. We should be ready.
Over here, the speculation over here, of course, is that the United States, one way or another, was behind it, because I believe they very much, based on some of Duterte's crazy activities, they actually want him to impose martial law on the whole country, and that's what I suspect is happening over here. And since the U.S. is actually the crypto backers of ISIS anyway, it's completely understandable that what's happening here is a big setup, because he dared to align with Russia and China and get rid of the bases.
Yes, it's all. Well, we need the capacity to, calmly hold 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 conflicting and all possibly true stories at once. It's a time for great nuance going right you know, tyranny and terrorism are complicitously in cahoots. They need each other as a, yes. you know, as a dance partner. And Duterte does many terrible things. And then also, that's right, in the, yes, in Russia, many terrible things. And we don't want to be suckered into, you know, the, you know, yes, all of those things of not being reactive, but being responsive.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's fascinating to look at the 8 or 9 different possible scenarios that are taking place. However, the dark underbelly is the capacity at times like this in history for a form of populism to take form with a fascist base and wanting black and white solutions.
Yes, and it was interesting, again, Timothy Snyder, who said many things, his book on tyranny, I aspire to book him for a full hour on this show as well. He says, you know, don't yeah. obey in advance, that's important. defend institutions of freedom, yes. Make eye contact and small talk, universal civility, you know, be available. Be calm when the unthinkable arrives, yes, absolutely. Those things. But also, he was interesting because he was asked by, you know, interviewers, you don't mention Trump in your book on tyranny. He goes, no, he's an old man, he's not going to change. It's up for us to be responsive and protecting and to realize how much power we have before things get more dangerous. Well, we don't know about where you are, right? I mean, where you are, I guess the danger level is increasing right now in the Philippines, even in your neighborhood?
No, there's no evidence of that around here. I mean, we're kind of in an isolated bubble to a certain extent up here. In fact, right now, actually, the main road from here down to Manila is washed out. due to the heavy rains that have happened, this was very much an anti-martial law area here. Quite frankly, that this is where the hotbed of the revolution against Marcos took place. But there's no sign really of anything like that here. Who knows what happens next? because I predicted to Lynn's family that one way or another there would be martial law in the whole country. And then what that basically means is they can arrest anyone without any cause, and they could disappear people and things like that.
Yeah, and we do want to, you know, just as we're gathered, you know, dedicated agents of Bodhisattva Coyote in the world, you know, for all good-hearted people who've been disappeared, you know, past, present, and future, and the three researchers in China who were investigating, you know, right. labor abuses in the factories manufacturing Ivanka's shoes have gone. And it was very poignant, though, wonderful wife of the lead investigator, all distressed, but she said, I haven't told our 3 and 7-year-old children yet, so they shouldn't know, but my son came to me, and I said, no, Daddy will be back, and he'll bring candy and good things, and her son said, no, Daddy's been taken by a monster. So, we all know, you know, again, there is a telepathic reality, and there are monsters, you know, and we as agents of Compassionate Trickster wish for the liberation of all beings, even the tyrant at some point in some perfect Buddhist cosmology. But, so navigating the Ghost River and for us, for you now, safe Philippines, for me outside D.C., for our listeners at the moment, everyone's safe, right? And that was also Timothy Snyder's point. He said, you know, now matters a lot before protests are banned, before things are increasingly dangerous. It's dangerous for many of us already who've been disappeared on the good-hearted team. But now, again, he says, not to drift, not to contribute complicity, you know. And he said, obedience, even inadvertent obedience to tyranny, gives tyranny bad ideas, right? So
yeah,
it's like, yeah, so there's those things. Wherever you want to go, of course, it's always, you know, lively and delicious to be able to dive in to the astro-guiding story without restraint or apology, right? So the sun overhead in Berkeley in Gemini, incarnation of Mercury, and right next to dwarf planet Ceres Demeter, you know, may we all be voices for the Earth at this poignant time, right, when Trump has withdrawn from Paris Accords. However, before I throw it to you, It takes not so fast, Mr. Trump, oh Scrotus, oh so-called ruler of the United States. It takes 4 years to get out of the Paris Accord, so America cannot leave it until November 4th, 2020, which is after the election. I go, oh, positive, binding Saturn, good. Okay, so there's that.
I do. Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
If you want me to speak of an interesting meta story for the current times, I got one for you.
Sure, you betcha.
Well, in the particular way I follow the visible planets, it's really like today, tomorrow, the next day, in the Mars cycle, that Mars is disappearing below the horizon into, using the ancient way of understanding it, into the underworld. And this particular portion of the Mars journey, Mars is now descending for about 3 months to be hidden behind the sun. Now, what's very interesting is that where Mars was in the sky as he is descending into the underworld over this last month was between the horns of the bull. So if we think of the constellation of the bull, there are two stars that represent its horns, which is where Mars was just as he is descending into the underworld. Now, bear with me for a moment. Because if we bring the Venus story in, the way we understand the mythic journey of Venus is it goes back to that interface between the age of Taurus and the age of Aries, the time period when a more female-based matrilineal line of descent, a different kind of organization of the culture was disappearing. And Inanna, Venus, representing the Queen of Heaven, it does this ceremonial journey every 8 years of going into the underworld to mourn the death of the great bull of heaven. It was a journey of mourning of the end of the age of Taurus, which represented certain principles, ways of life regarding the feminine and other things that were dying. And so she was entering into the underworld to mourn the death of the age of the bull. And so now, just as Mars, during this momentous time in 2017, is descending into the underworld, it's as if he's being gored by the bull of heaven and being sent into the underworld. And he will be in the underworld at the time of the U.S. eclipse in August. And I'm sure you've checked it out to what extent that eclipse is related to the chart of Donald Trump and some of the main configurations that are happening on his chart, his daughter, and also Kushner. They all are sort of located in the same area of Sagittarius. Their Venus positions, the Sagittarian position, which have to do with the Saturn position you invoked earlier. So, I mean, basically, I think the imagery is quite remarkable, that the great bull of heaven is now, in a sense, goring Mars going into the underworld, preparing him, hopefully, for a journey of surrender, humility, openness, and also his grieving, hopefully, of what has taken place on this planet over the last few thousand years.
Right.
It's a great setup, actually.
No, that's great. Let us to and fro. Yes, there's Mars disappearing, it's true. At 28 plus Gemini, straight up overhead in Berkeley, just for the fun of it, a wonderful degree. You've which is the first mockingbird of spring, and I love sitting in a garden with a friend who said, "Oh, there's the mockingbird. That's the bird that knows all the songs." So you've often, you know, referred to Mars and Gemini as the troubadour bard, and we go, well, going into the underworld, there's, again, many ways to tell the story. That's a good one. That's the primary one that you've just done. But I love, the gods and goddesses when Mars, unsupervised Mars in the form of Hercules, was laying waste to the world, and the gods sentenced him to go to the underworld to learn knitting and weaving, to weave back together the fabric of creation that he'd been sundering. And we go, yeah, I like that image. I like the image of all tyranny, regardless of our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment. All tyranny, go to the underworld to learn knitting and weaving. There's Trump knitting tea cozies down there in the underworld. There's the, you know, the, yes, all of that. So, so this disappearing, and then how would you like to honor the, you know, the emerging of Venus, Inanna, Queen of Heaven, you know, as the morning star now, you know, lined up with Eris, goddess of disruption, way out there, but we welcome her just as part of our vocabulary, why not? Right next to asteroid Pallas Athena, and of course right next to Uranus Trickster at the a large audience for somebody who you know, disrupts their expectations. Take it wherever you want, Master.
No. I was just adding some additional elements, just as you are. So that this 28th degree of Gemini will soon be just at the absolute specific point when Mars enters the underworld as zero Cancer, which happens to be the summer solstice degree, or the June solstice degree, and there happens to also be the exact point of the galactic edge. It's basically where incoming new creation enters. And during virtually the entire time that Mars is in the underworld, he's in what the Lakota call the sacred hoop, the stars that circle the galactic edge where incoming creation happens. So here we have Mars going into the underworld at the galactic edge in the circle of the stars called the sacred hoop. And the imagery that I like to add to it, and borrowed from indigenous and particularly Native American traditions, is that at such a time, it's like the Okipa, or the sun dance, as it later became known, where the male would go into a place of surrender, of going through certain kinds of very stressful circumstances, let's say, in order to become vulnerable, to be open-hearted, to be feel powerless to a certain extent, and then his journey is for the sake of the people. And this is what I'm hopeful for in this mythic unfolding, that there will be the men who are able to grieve what has taken place and then be open to opening their hearts and to be open to creating a different kind of a world. However, those that are not willing to do that, well, then we have that imagery of being gored by the bull of heaven, you know, and say, okay, it's time for you to go into the underworld and to go through some kind of rite of passage to awaken your heart. What you said about what Venus is up to is that where she's located in the sky is right at that portion of the sky where the waters coming out of the water jar, the celestial rivers of life, the water streaming out of the jar of the constellation Aquarius is washing over her, possibly giving her the capacity to also have compassion for the men who are willing to, we could say, open up, own up, be willing to change the game that has been in place for a long time. So this is happening at the fifth chakra gate in the Venus journey, which is where she is able to speak it clearly, to tell the truth about it, to have her voice, to release any boundaries, any restrictions that would allow her to tell the full story of what she has experienced, not from just a place of righteous indignation and anger, which she is justified to have, but also with some degree of compassion toward the fact that essentially all human beings, not just women, have been victims of the consensus reality system.
Right. And I love the Mars in Cancer going to the underworld, meaning to remember, the protection of life. That you know, the true purpose of the hero is to protect life. You know, as Robert Bly said a long time ago, you know, the loneliest person in creation is the man after industrialism who has to leave the kids and the family and leave the husbandry and the plants and go out into alienation and get crazy and inadvertently serve the overlords. And we go, well, there's that, you know. And then, you know, we honor and love all of our flora, fauna, kin, and little shout-out to late, great Dr. Wu Ketman, who was a bully, a giant black cat who bullied the cats, and then I finally, like King Shahryar, you know, was massaging him, big purr, rum, 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 and I go, you are such a guy. You are such a guy. You are strong enough to be gentle. Yes, you are. And he took it to heart, and he became the protector of those he'd been oppressing. And when his primary oppressed kitty was dying, he was her comforter and her groomer and everything. We go, yeah, like that. You know, three drops of that medicine. You know, and especially because Mars, as you say, it's zero cancer, is its image. Sabian is a sailor lowers one flag and raises another, going, it's time for that. Lowering one flag, raising another. But the Venus dynamic, you know, Venus as, I sort of view Venus, conjoining trickster Uranus, yes, the truth sayer, absolutely, and then it's also kind of the part of the anonymous, which is when she gets back from the underworld, she decides she's going to rescue culture, right? And she, her overland adventure, she becomes a trickster redeemer, and she does rescue human culture that's been kidnapped by Enki and had empty celebrity baubles in its place. So I love, you know, those who survive the journey to the underworld earn the opportunity to be cultural trickster redeemers, right? Is that in accord with your play?
Yeah, and in the indigenous understanding of it is then to be truly in a position as a quote unquote wounded healer to serve the people. You no longer are coming from a place of arrogance and know it all and I'm a great warrior, but you've actually gone into a place of abject surrender and vulnerability, and then you can really truly serve the people. That would be the male part of it. That would be the old stories of when the masculine would go into the underworld. In the story that I've been sharing here regarding it, people like Gilgamesh and Hercules and Abraham in another tradition anyway represent the incoming new transmission that Inanna was mourning the death of when she went to the funeral of the great bull of heaven. And I always like to think of one of our allies, Martine Brechtel, always speaks of, which is that how can this culture change until they can get in touch with their grief for the disconnect from the animals, from the plants, from the our connection to the earth herself.
Yes, and I've been kind of working with the different councils I kind of convene online, the trickster training councils, going, all right, if there is an atmosphere of churlish cruelty wafting over the world, which is available where people get possessed, I'm happy with that metaphor, again, in a reverent, careful way. You know, over this last weekend, the Mars-Saturn opposition, there were many customized forms of encountering external Saturn tyranny, some kerfuffles, some tragedies, but a number of people, terrible crime man shoots, you know, eight people, partly members of his family, man kills two positive heroes who were protecting two young Islamic women in Portland, Oregon. But a number of them said, I don't know what got into me. And I go, I like the model of possession, that there's a collective cloud, there's this mob mind encouragement, and psychic psychotic, it pressure comes down and erupts through vulnerable psychic psychotic thin membrane beings. So for us too, it encourages and behooves us in a way to withdraw any of our own complicity, known or unknown, in churlish cruelty. I've been very the image, the Egyptian iconography, you know, is very around me since my return from Egypt. It's very strong, and the image of, you know, the judgment day, which of course is not one day, it's every hour, really, you know, of the heart weighed against a feather, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, for all of us, in a way, it's like to make amends. Remember in Gurdjieffian's level systems, remorse, when we were churlish in the face of life's generous opportunity, when we were like, no, it's the highest of the negative states before clarity, right? There's, you know, conditioning and things and king ego and import, self-import, many things, but remorse is very high. And so I think, you know, just for everybody to go, all right, in case I was ever a churlish dingbat, I want to inhale that, you know, from the undesirable Dementor of Doom cloud and exhale into the desirable, you know, a download of available responses for people under stressful pressure. You know, and part of that, you did kind of bring that up, because one of the crucial things about tyranny, of course, is we forget magic. When we're right in that thing, you know, whose movie are we in? We go, oh, almost forgot about inviting in what's truly best for everybody. And where I want to toss it back to you is, you know, you mentioned Wounded Healer, and we go, Chiron perked up his ears, but also said, don't stop there, the Wounded Healer thing. But Mars is exactly square Chiron in Pisces. We'll decode this, just as the Sun and Ceres are squaring Neptune and Pisces, this re-wedding of, you know, of a false estrangement between intellect and myth and dreaming and symbolic language, right? Something certainly you and we've been dedicated to for the longest time, going, yes, intellectual, pragmatic mysticism, they love each other, ideas, thinking, right? Is that in accord with your feeling of the choreography now?
To a great extent, recently in our school we had a whole class on the larger configuration, which what you brought up is a small part of, which is the a whole year pretty much dominated by Saturn square Chiron, takes us back, actually. It's really kind of amazing. Takes us back to the seed point of that relationship between Saturn and Chiron in 1966, which, interestingly enough, was also the seed point of the Uranus-Pluto configuration that has been so dominant over the last number of years. And so basically what we're trying to perceive right now is a reworking of the relationship between these two. So that rather than Saturn being a repressor of, you know, the interface between human and animal, between human and the gods, and pretending to be just God himself, that we're looking more at the more ancient and larger view of Saturn before it was overlaid by guilt and shame and patriarchy and judgment and the sort of the superego infection that it goes into Saturn as we've known him recently. And to go back to the more female expression of Saturn, and how that would show up as a wise elder, as a mentor, wise elder, which is very much what Chiron also was, also a mentor, a teacher. And so have those two working together, as elders and teachers and mentors, and not trying to make human beings separate from our connection to both our immortality, but also our humanness and our animal nature and our connection to the land and the earth and everything else, so that to have them work as a team, as they tried, as it looked like it was going to happen if you'd been through the 60s, for Chiron and Pisces, having to do with the redemptive healing that comes from expanded states of consciousness and ecstatic experience and the opening of the heart and music and, you know, dance and indigenous and all of that, that was the hallmark of that particular configuration and Saturn and Pisces at that time. We're having the standoff between those two again. I mean, say the standoff, but I'm looking at the synthesis and how these other factors that you're bringing in, like where Mars is and some of the other symbols, definitely refers to that, some kind of resolution between that seed point that happened in 1966. So that we're working with that very much.
Yeah, no, again, we bring up the oft-quoted, but still wonderful, you know, Mark Twain, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. So there's a resonance, you know, to the mid-60s, and now, I'm supplicating Hermes for strength, there we go. I'm talking to Hermes, I don't know if people can hear a
hum. I hear you.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, there we go. Yes, oh, Mercury presiding over everything, over the sun and the moon and the rising sign of our chart and everything. There we go. Easy. Now, it is like we want to, you know, everything is alive and, you know, we do want to speak to ourselves and the world as though it were a spooked wild horse going, easy, easy, there you go, the gate's open, there's no trap, here you go. So these valuable seed points, right, that are kind of what, hopping up and down, awaiting animation, much of the music, much of the spirit, much of all of that going, right, come on in, but on another round of the, right, where the circles turned into a spiral of actually embodied maturation, where there was lip service to true equality between Venus and Mars and men and women in the 60s, but not quite actually. And maybe Venus right now is insisting. Right, I'm going to toss it to you, but hold that thought. Our wonderful guest is Daniel Jamario. He is joining us from the Philippines, and we'll be right back after a very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Indigo skyship, make his voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we are welcoming, always welcome, fellow astro-mytho-cultural change wizard Daniel Jamario, that we may animate the desirable story while critiquing, not skipping over Act 4, how grim things are. And again, wherever you want to go, we were at the humming of 1966 to now, and the myth, all mythic figures are welcome, the myth of Chiron, the people say wounded healer, and we go, don't stop there, because he's the mentor. He's a mentor who starts a school for future cultural heroes. So I love that he's a mentor and a centaur. He's a mentor centaur, causing Steve Behrman to quip, going to take a centaur mentor journey. Okay. So it is again, the dream states, though. Well, that's I think why I wanted to sort of, you know, keep all of us in mind that we're all public dreamers, you know, and part of, you know, your work and my work and radio work and KPFA's work is, you know, the invisible atmospheric contributes, you know, that we are all public dreamers, that everything we do, think, say, feel, you know, goes into the collective in some way, and that there are many ways of influence. And that's also remembering, you know, to invite in whatever. If we don't know what to do, wonder and invite in what does. You know, come on in. You know, metaphoric mentors, come on in. I think of Neptune and Pisces as the, you know, backstage, the gods, the flora, fauna are convening on humans. We're going to have to either kill them or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's make everything, you know, back to the 60s and also 1966 BC, let's make everything, and further, let's make everything that has ever brought forth conscious kinship in humans available for fresh animation. Because there is a great resurgence, and I also like Jupiter retrograde. We're all rummaging through our journals or our journeys or anything that was possibly inspiring in our journey of our life, and then also in the journey of humans. What has ever moved humans to goodness? I mean, do you feel that there's also this kind of private and collective uprush of, you know, material that we all meant to syncretize in some useful form?
Yeah, that's actually what I see happens at a waning square. So that if we're going back to the seed point in 1966, it's up for deeper digestion and dissemination at this point. So, you know, we see it just on the surface level of the reoccurrence and at a much the higher level of the so-called culture wars. And it can be seen as the, you know, whether on one side is Sessions and on the other side is the rush toward, you know, legalization and opening toward, you know, recreational marijuana or medical marijuana and so forth. That's just one small thing. So it's a way of integrating the what the insights were of the seed point, and then whatever what needs to be integrated and digested with it, and then disseminated. If I might, may I share the largest meta story on what I think is happening?
Of course, and I'm very happy the dog is encouraging you. Yes, tell that story. Arf, arf.
Oh, you can hear the dog. Yes, I know. We have our dog up on the porch here that comes around.
We like it. We like it. We'd be nothing without dogs. It's welcome. Yes, absolutely.
We love our doggies. They're so amazing. But anyway, I mentioned it briefly earlier that when there's something right around zero cancer, that's right at what's called the galactic edge. And the oldest star story has to do with what we call the Golden Gate and the Silver Gate. That when souls come into incarnation, they come through the Silver Gate, which is right smack in the middle of this hoop of stars, right at the galactic edge. The astronomers, for those of you who have not heard the expression galactic edge, we thought that was a little bit more elegant statement than the galactic anti-center, which is what they call it. And so you've got this place where the Milky Way is coming through that circle of stars from outside the galaxy. I mean, it looks like it's outside the galaxy because it's looking out into deep space. But then the word you love to use, and which I love to use these days a lot, is composting.
Yes.
And so there is a place in the sky that's the place for composting. And that's Galactic Center, which is where Saturn himself, herself, I'd rather call Saturn. The ancient Saturn is more female than male. Anyway, this is the place of Galactic Center, the great black hole, and which the ancients saw as the Golden Gate, which is where things get composted. And it's a kind of where we're basically that which no longer needs to be here, that which has spent, that which has reached the end of the line in one way or the other, goes to the Golden Gate in between the scorpion and the archer, right in that very interesting part of the sky, which is where Saturn is now. So it's this more recent aberrant version of Saturn, which is actually what is being composted. That's certainly part of our great working in our school, is to imagine that. That's also connected, Caroline, to the reworking of our understanding of Capricorn. And it's the Council of Elders of women, of as you put it, grandmother goat. Absolutely. So here's Saturn sitting at the Golden Gate, in opposition to where Mars is at the Silver Gate, where the unrush of new creation is coming in. And while he's in the underworld, we're just hoping and praying and invoking that he does receive insights and new vision out of his vulnerability, that there can be then this new expression of the masculine in both men and women that emerges.
Right, and again, I love Timothy Snyder, his book on tyranny, saying, look at what comes out of, again, churlish bad behavior on a part of America is, Macron and Angela Merkel taking it as an opportunity to reinvent Europe. And
yes.
And again, this is where we call upon all of ourselves and our wonderful dedicated listeners, and who are occasionally hermaphroditous going, Angela Merkel, that, and we go, no, we discourage the bad and we encourage the good in everyone. There we go. And she's stepping up as the leader of the free world. And when you were last on the show many months ago, you Daniel had actually said that, many of your German friends had quite changed their attitude about Angela Merkel. Again, people can change, right? Do you want to remind us of that?
Well, yeah, that actually some years back they were so displeased with her that the dogs they didn't like were named Merkel. but now they refer
Terrible.
To her as Mother Merkel. And if you look at her chart, Jupiter and the Sun in Cancer, Venus in Virgo, and as symbols of the script that we mythically and astrologically use, those are the main symbols of all the different energies of Mother. There's the personal mothering of your tribe, your country, hopefully the whole world, and then Virgo, that's Earth Mother herself, and that's right there on her horoscope. Not only that, interestingly enough, Sag rising Mars at 26 Sagittarius. Where have we seen that before? happens to also be exactly the degree of the Donald's Mars.
Mm-hmm.
26.
Right. Back. Well, yeah. Well, it does remind us that we all have assignments, and it behooves us to animate the desirable, lest the Dementors, you know, animate the undesirable aspects of that. But that's very intriguing. That's the flag bearer, I think. It's also like Elizabeth Warren, born on the summer solstice, Sun Uranus conjunction in Cancer. You know, again, people can go, oh, yes, she didn't support Bernie, and she's terrible. And it's like, no, she didn't support Bernie, and that was, you know, whatever. But she's done many, many good things. And again, everybody's role in the mystery play, you know, to tease sane, reverent common sense into public policy is kind of part of her dynamic. So, yeah, again, you know, we are composting all churlishness, right, and being magnetizing inviters to the better story while fully cognizant of how horrible things are, you know, Act 4, but still, you know, that realm. So, yeah, so, okay, yes, wherever you want to come in.
Well, have you looked at her chart? I mean, it's pretty astounding relative to Trump, and also amazing connections with the U.S. chart. She has Sun Uranus conjunct at 24 Cancer, 23 Cancer, 24 Cancer. And there we have Trump's Saturn Venus conjunction at 25 and 23 Cancer. And so you talk about an agent of an unexpected and dramatic assemblage point shift when those two encounter each other. And then representing a completely different imagery of that 26th degree of Leo, which also happens to be so connected to the U.S. eclipse, you know, which is right at those same degrees. She's Aquarius Moon, by the way.
Well, so it's an interesting play on Elizabeth Warren, whose Sun Uranus conjunction in Cancer with Jupiter in Aquarius. Again, little angle there going. So that Aquarius, again, to tease the sane, reverent, you know, Big Mama, ideally kind of thing, into the larger collective dynamic, going, yes, there we go. Just, again, sane, reverent common sense, you know, may it be on the rise. And, you know, and it's again intriguing, you know, what Timothy Snyder was saying, and many, many people too, which is, not to feed the Trump. He said he hadn't included Trump in his book because he said, again, he's not going to change, you know, but also to not be distracted by, you know, is he crazy or was whatever, which is very enticing. But while we're being snookered in a way or giving too much chi to that, we want to look over there in a way where you're directing us also too, which is, you know, where's, you know, if a lot of these planetary assignments are related between Angela Merkel and Trump, you know, and so who's doing a good job, right? There we go. I'll go over there. Look, what are the possibilities of that? How do we bring that into play? So the eclipse, yes, August 21st, I will be at the Symbiosis Gathering in Eastern Oregon with wonderful Amakela. Will be emceeing one of the stages there, and for the eclipse, and it is my brother Joe's birthday, so he'll be there too. And but you know, aren't eclipses also associated with the downfall of tyrants?
Oh, absolutely, and you know, it just recently occurred to me that. I don't know how I missed it, Trump was actually born under at a lunar eclipse. And so on the exact day of his birth was a lunar eclipse, and then we have the U.S. solar eclipse happening on those same degrees. And so here, I think that the ancients would have considered that to be incredibly important. And the more dualistic way that they looked at eclipses before is that it would be the fall of regimes. Of course, when you have a fall of regime, you have the rise of another one.
Right.
And this, I find it very interesting how this particular eclipse is exactly the same family of eclipses that was the one from 1999 that swept across Europe. Yeah, so there's a quite an interesting historical connection between this coming eclipse, the one that in 1999, and then in the history of this particular eclipse sequence, there was always, if you go all the way back, there was either an assassination or an attempt at an assassination on an American president. It was the same Saros that happened when Kennedy was assassinated.
Yes, I'd like to compost that.
I'm just saying. I'm only throwing that at you, with reference to your comment about the beliefs that have happened in the world regarding
right,
how closely can be connected to those kinds of
the downfall of tyrants. And I think also remember, you know, it was the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, you know, that was also about the removal of presidents, you know, every 20 years. And then, but Reagan was elected on that, and the conjunction was in air. So I remember quipping at the time going, oh, so it's his mind that will leave office, not his body, which is true. And I think there's a resonance here. One of my compassionate friends who's a psychiatrist, we were listening to a really good audio clip, a linguistic analysis of Trump 20 years ago, talking to Larry King, even during the campaign, not in these hammered phrases, but in spontaneous moments, and now. And they say there's an incredible linguistic deterioration of specific verbs and adverbs, and the syntax is all gone. And they go, you know, neurological decline. And my psychiatrist ally said, you know, perhaps we should have compassion and also call elder care, you know, that he's an Alzheimer dementia patient being abused by his Rasputins and his daughter and his wife. And I'll go, well, there's another story. I think that could also be resonantly part of the dynamic. But if we wonder, you know, born on a lunar eclipse, which, again, everything real invites us to think of it as a guiding metaphor. You know, on a lunar eclipse, it's a precise full moon where the, you know, it's the the sun, the earth, the moon lined up. So we see the earth's shadow projected onto the moon. We see shadow. So if that is Trump's, or SCROTUS, as I like to refer to him, so-called ruler of the United States, role in the mystery play to be this, you know, giant shadow embodiment of American murderous vulgarity, we go, well done, lad, and now you can go off stage. There you go, go off to the replenishing underworld. There, you've done that. That was, you know, there we have it. No, it's probably not, but I also want to, you know, and I have not seen Angela Merkel's chart. I'm going to dive right into it as soon as you send it to me after this show. That's really great. But yeah.
Excuse me. I did make a mainly because I had just gotten up and it's so early here. I made a need to correct something.
Yes.
It was actually Angela Merkel's Pluto that's on his Mars. Actually, her Mars is not 26 Leo. Excuse me. And somebody's gonna, you know, say, hey, what the hell is he talking about? Actually her Mars degree is 26 Sagittarius.
I think you
said that. Yeah. Did I?
I think you got it right. I think you got it right the first time. But I like that her Pluto is on his Mars. It's like mytho poker. I see your immature strutting, and I raise you Pluto.
exactly.
Right. I will not feed that. You know, pretty good. And you know, and Macron on purpose holding Trump's hand tightly, even when he wished to escape, saying I did that on purpose, that we're not, you know, just so he knows who's here, and we're not here to be bullied. And we go, okay, alrighty, that's good. You know, the withdrawing of the Paris Accord, we do go, shameful and missing the whole point of life and the thing. But again, we remember America cannot withdraw until November 4th, 2020. It takes 4 years. There's a, it's like backing out of the rental car returning garage. The spikes are there. You can't back out before November 4th, 2020. So, you know, so what do you feel also about a collective accord of sanity, you know, that the baton passes to, you know, Germany and France and in trippy ways, China, terrible, disappearing important people, but also saying we will lead now in climate redressing. We're the biggest polluters, except for America. But now we will be the biggest, you know. So there's a lot of do-si-do kind of going on. How do you view this from the Philippines? What's going on there?
Well, let me just back up for a moment before I go there. When you were bringing up about the lunar eclipse and the shadow of the Earth projected onto the Moon, in the historical traditions around eclipses, even some of the great spiritual leaders felt that the lunar eclipses were far more shadow-esque and difficult than the solar eclipses. And one thing to keep in mind here is that the solar eclipse happening to the U.S. Across the U.S. is a north node solar eclipse. Whenever you have the super new moon, you know, which is what always happens at I call super new moon, mainly it's a new moon more important than a regular new moon, happening at the north node, it's completely progressive. It's like a blast into a future. If there's ever a seed point in order to build and create and imagine the world we want, it's precisely the opposite of what happens at a lunar eclipse. So I just want to hold that imagery rather than the fear kind of thing regarding eclipses, you know. That's the first thing. The view from here, basically the majority of the views here would be that in the Philippines, the Philippines would be way better off being neutral and having as much connection to China and Russia as they do to the U.S. So they don't, because they know they would be targets if there is any kind of a shooting war. That's one view. The other is the fact that it's all a charade. There's not actually a conflict between the U.S. and China, for example. It might be with Russia. I'm not sure about that. It could be a deep state kind of thing. But between the China and the U.S., this has been built up for a long time. That behind the scenes, that in business interest and banking interest and so on, they're in cahoots.
Yes. And several miles back at the beginning also, you did sort of slide in that, of course, the people in the Philippines understand that America is the primary backer of ISIS. Did you said that way back there? I was just going to say that is what people in Egypt think, and I go, I think it's a little more subtle in its complicity, but you feel that it's actually literal.
Yeah, well, it's partly because of so much connection the Filipinos have with places like Qatar, and there's so many overseas workers and so on. So it's very easy to see how the battle between the different factions in the Middle East plays out in the covert creation of the ISIS fighters in order to create the agenda for the American century. The destabilization of so many countries, in which Syria and Iran are on the list. So it's all is a follow up from the creation of the Mujahideen, and also which was created by the CIA.
Right, and the Mossad created Hamas. Yes. That's right. Absolutely for sure. Yeah, again, well, the shadow play, a little spiraling around here. But when you said that the lunar eclipse, I remember seeing the humans emerging from their churlish and superstitious, sometimes in black magic kind of realm. The lunar eclipse was used more for black magic. I remember the traditional text going, and as the moon is eclipsed, so may my enemies be. And I saw people use that to ill effect, and we go, no, it's a beautiful phenomenon, you humans, just we see shadow and respond appropriately. Yeah, so we do want to throw that back there. But so yeah, we are eclipsophiles. We also love I want to do a little honoring to Jupiter briefly, because as allies and things come in from backstage and mythologically, and I just want to do a shout out to ancestors, spirit brother J.R. Nall and his great friend Susan Shannon. Just now, it just arrived on my desk, sent me a wonderful Ganesh of his, which is beautiful. So we go, oh, Ganesh, like Mushkal Gosha, the remover of all difficulties, to whom Thursday is sacred, arriving right now at a time of need. We like all totems and all blessings from the ancestors and the current allies, and we bring all that into play, you know, as well. Do you want to do any dance about Jupiter and Pluto? Any honoring the dead? Anybody dead you want to invite in right now?
Greg Allman.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's good. Yes, come in, Greg Allman. Come in. That's right. Oh, be helpful.
Chris Cornell.
Say what?
Chris Cornell.
Oh, remind me, Chris Cornell, and the quality of what?
Oh, no, just to speak of those that have just recently died,
yes.
that had that had some alchemical and magical effect on large numbers of people.
Yes, that yes. Come on in, all allies. The hidden choir is singing back there, and I suppose again, right now, you know, I don't know if we, you know, see, even in our final moments, we can kind of bring in the whole gang, you know, since we are in the realm of the sun in Gemini, which is incarnation of Mercury, and the moon in Virgo, called the witch's moon, the wizard's moon, the writer's moon, the moon of small things, of ritual magic, small things, you know, have a big effect, the right word, the right thing. So we go, and Mars in Gemini. So we go, well, where's Mercury? And Mercury's in Taurus. So we're kind of coming around again, the earth, the sensual thing, the power of chanting, the power of communing. There was a wonderful little short piece on NPR about people losing their hearing when they, you know, when they joined a choir, even with no musical experience, when they would improve their pitch, their hearing improved, that we track pitch and frequency. And I just wanted to do a little tossing to you of the Mercury at the divinatory degree. I'm pretty sure it's the divinatory degree of... Oops. Well, I will be looking that up while you respond. Wait. Well, I
know. Well, the only thing I can to add to this is that in that larger meta story of Mars going into the underworld, it's quite interesting that in the Mercury cycle, he is himself, rather, I don't want to project any gender onto Mercury. Mercury is also now going into his own aspect, Pierre said the word again, his, going into the underworld also, but it's the other side of the sun also. So it's actually during the time period that Mars is in the underworld, the first month of that time, Mercury is with him on the other side of the sun. And when that occurs, then Mercury attains, it's a psychopomp expression. It's when he is a guide for souls, essentially assisting Mars in his journey of surrender and vulnerability. And I think it's fabulous that Mercury happens to be aligned with Mars as they both disappear behind the sun in those portions of their cycles. So they become allies over these next number of weeks.
That's beautiful. That's great. Yeah, and the Sabian symbol, again, metaphors for each degree of the zodiac for Mercury now, is a white dove flying over troubled waters. We go crossing the great water, assuring that what one seeks is near at hand. We love that. So on our way out, do you want to have a short wafting blessing out there? Anything that you want to waft out into the world, and also how people can find you?
The Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, and that's easy to find online, shamanicastrology.com. I have a new book coming out, The Origins of the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm. I'll actually be out over this next week or two. I'll be hosting groups in Wales and Wiltshire, and also in Portugal in September. I do these journeys to Europe, to ancient megalithic sites.
That's great. We're on our way out. We're on our way out. Thank you always, Daniel Zamario, and we will reconvene absolutely. And the I Ching says that we should have great courage now. Great courage now. I'll be at Open Secret on June 21st and in Bolinas on June 23rd. CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Thanks to Erica Bridgman, always. Again, wonderful Skookum board up. And thank you again, Daniel Zamario.
Thank you, Caroline. Always great riffing with you and being in a good state of cahoots.
Absolutely. Woof, woof. Thank you, team.
Are you wanting support to resolve conflicts in your life?
Do you wish you were better at creating a peaceful and just world?
On Talk It Out Radio, Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m., we offer the skills of self-compassion,
effective communication,
and creating understanding across differences.
Come listen, call in, and practice with us.
Talk It Out.
Talk It Out.
Talk It Out Radio, Sundays, 7 to 8 p.m. on KPFA.
KBFA Undercover and the UC Theater invite you to celebrate the 50-year anniversary of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. 13 local bands from 13 different genres will be reinterpreting the groundbreaking record on June 3rd at the stunning UC Theater in Berkeley. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band has been hailed by Rolling Stone as the most important rock and roll album ever made. Undercover has curated over 100 musicians, dancers, and visual artists, including 13 bands. Genres range between rock, Indian, classical, orchestral, soul, jazz, and more. That's Undercover Presents, a tribute to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, again held at the UC Theater on June 3rd in Berkeley. This is an all-ages and ADA-friendly show. This event is wheelchair accessible and is a benefit for Undercover Presents.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1